This episode of Bitch Propaganda was recorded on Friday, March 18th, in a press lounge in Austin, Texas. Please forgive the background noise. We looked for a quieter room, but believe it or not, this was the best we could do. Enjoy the podcast.
Okay, this is Erica Lees, and I'm in Austin, Texas, covering South by Southwest for Bitch Media.
And I'm Kelsey Wallace, the web editor for Bitch.
I'm Sarah Rehani, and I'm also covering South by Southwest for Bitch in Austin.
And we're going to talk about a panel that we sat in today called Finding the Female Funny, Is It Different for Girls? And it was moderated by Rachel Sklar.
And the other panel contributors were Erin Carmen of Jezebel, Michaela Watkins of SNL, Jamie Denbo, a comedian who does Rana and Beverly, and Stuart Bloomberg, a screenwriter and TV writer. He co-wrote The Kids Are All Right with Lisa Cholodenko, and he started from that TV.
So, well, let's just start with the basics. Did you enjoy the panel?
I did. I thought that there were a lot of really good information came out, and especially talking about stuff that's not as visible, like behind the scenes that, you know, we're not going to know about or see unless we are there.
Like, what was one thing that stood out as kind of a inside info that you hadn't thought of before, if anything?
I don't think any of it was stuff I hadn't thought of before, but no, like kind of having confirmation, like when Michaela Watkins was talking about trying to find actresses over 35 and how it's not that those people don't exist, but that the studio heads will approve of only very few of them, and many of them are names that those budgets can't afford.
Yeah, and that was something that was new to me, and I guess if I had sort of thought about it, I might have been able to figure it out on my own, but I hadn't really thought about it in that much depth before, and the whole Q score thing, the like actors have a really qualitative number attached to their name, and that's how studios decide whether or not they can afford to put them in a certain movie.
That was crazy.
Yeah, I mean that was something that I sort of knew, like, you know, certain stars are bankable and, you know, they draw such and such salary, but the fact that every actor, not just the big names but the other ones, I mean, I know like Jim Carrey is a $20 million man or whatever, but even Annette Bening has a number attached to her name, and it's definitely not $20 million.
And it's, I mean, people are essentially products.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a sort of a confirmation of a sort of distasteful thing we all knew about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really surprised because that information came out in the context of a question about The Kids Are All Right, where Stuart, was Bloomberg his last name? Yeah, was talking about getting that made. And I was surprised that with Annette Bening and Julianne Moore at the helm, they still couldn't get it together to get funding that they had wanted, and that it still kind of came out as a, I mean, obviously the movie came out well, but they didn't have the days of shooting that they wanted, and it was because those women somehow aren't bankable enough when, to me, they're huge stars.
Me too. Yeah, but for me, like, yeah. Annette Bening is a reason I will go see a movie.
So huge stars, like, oh, Jennifer Aniston's a huge star, but, like, they are critically acclaimed, have tons of accolades.
They've won multiple Oscar nominations. Yeah. It's not like people don't know who they are.
Exactly.
Yeah, so then I thought, gosh, can you even imagine if they wouldn't have been able to get those actors and were working with people who are less famous, you know, and just, I know that's not just the case for women. I mean, I think there's a small pool of men who have high, you know, they were calling it a Q star too, but I mean, I thought it was interesting in the context of the panel, kind of relating it to women and the fact that especially the older you get, the smaller the pool is, until if you aren't, I don't even know who it would be, Helen Mirren, then forget it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It's like for women over 35, the opportunities are so few that it's not worth it to them to keep working, and so that makes it harder for the few people that are writing these funny roles for older women to be able to find the few women they need.
I thought it was interesting when Michaela Watson was talking about,
I think it's Watkins, actually.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Watkins. Talking about a script that she wrote, I think she said it was for ABC, and
yeah,
she had imagined herself playing a lead, and the executive said, you know, a woman over 32 who doesn't have her shit together is just kind of sad.
Yeah.
That we
yeah.
need
whereas,
someone younger.
Whereas, I mean, the character was supposed to be pushing 40 and still a mess.
Yeah, and it's like, oh gosh, if you're going to be a mess, then you need to be quite a bit younger. We can't depress audiences by seeing a woman who's quote-unquote older, too. I don't consider a 38-year-old woman
too
old to watch on TV.
I was kind of curious because I remember when she mentioned this, sort of, it led into them talking about Liz Lemon, but I was curious as to when exactly she had that pilot. Was it before or after 30 Rock? Because on 30 Rock, you have a woman who's definitely pushing 40, I guess, at least, maybe not at least, but she's presumed to be around that age.
This season they've actually said she's 40.
She's 40, right, yeah. So, and it's obviously a very successful show. So I'd be interested to know whether or not, or around what time, Michaela Watkins was trying to get herself in this pilot.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's something that I thought was interesting. I think sometimes I get in the mode of being kind of a critic who gets really cynical about stuff like this and just expects a panel like this to be, like, gosh, it's so hard to be a woman in Hollywood, and, like, what's the point? And, you know, this is all just kind of a major downer. And so I was pleasantly surprised at the optimism of the people on the panel, which is like, hey, you know what? This is not perfect by any means, but we're seeing a lot of inroads that we didn't have a few years ago. And that, you know, they mentioned 30 Rock, you know, we're talking about people producing their own content for the web. And then also the new Kristen Wiig movie, Bridesmaids, that Erica and I saw last night, that's going to come out in May, I believe. Everyone on the panel was really excited about it, yeah, because it's an ensemble, all-female cast, and is kind of a, you know, a dude style of raunchy comedy, and just like, hey, guess what? Women can be in this kind of spotlight, too. On the other hand, I don't always like the kind of, you know, good for the goose, good for the gander, like, men can fart, so women can too. It's like, there should be more opportunities besides just a Judd Apatow vehicle, but still, it's step in a direction that I think we've all been wanting to go.
Yeah, and I think it's also one of those things where we don't want to just stop at something like Bridesmaids. The point is to have something like Bridesmaids, to have something like maybe, you know, like a higher level of humor, but to have all of those options as a, right, instead of just, you know, one thing. I mean, one thing that I did like about, like, the sort of body humor is that that was a movie where women had bodies. You know, they weren't just like these hermetically sealed.
Right.
You know, they everything is perfect and they're perfect.
Yeah, there's like a huge Barfarama vomiting scene, and there's like a diarrhea scene in a wedding
even
dress.
Sex in the City had a diarrhea scene.
Yeah.
It's been done.
We know women can get diarrhea. We're actually in a press lounge right now where they're giving away diarrhea medication or a diarrhea pills as part of like
a survival kit.
So I don't think those are just for the men.
I think those were well intentioned.
Hey, for the people who need to use them, they're going to be good.
They're probably like, you're going to be eating like crap.
You don't want to have to ask your pedicab driver where you can get some diarrhea.
Another thing I thought was interesting that I had not thought of really was how many careers have been launched from like bit parts, mm-hmm, that not a lot of consideration is given to, and that's the area where women are feeling frustrated, because those kind of best friends, neighbor in the movie for one scene type of roles are primarily filled by men, and then those are the type that can, you know, launch someone's career. Like, I mean, I think she mentioned Aziz Ansari and Funny People. You know, I mean, I'm sure we can think of more examples, but where it's just kind of like,
well, even
a random part.
I watched Anchorman years after it came out and realized that Seth Rogen is like a cameraman, and I was like two lines, mm-hmm, you know? And that was something that I had thought about because I used to be an actor, and so it was like, there's all these ridiculous looking dudes in this show or whatever video is being cast, and yet I can't be in it because I'm not like the love interest, mm-hmm, you know, because I'm kind of a muppety or whatever, which is, you know, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But I was like, why can't I play the ridiculous jerk part? Why aren't you a camera operator? Yeah.
I think that's definitely like, if a woman is auditioning for a role, being a woman has to be the central tenet of the whole role. It's like, you know, the love interest or whatever, but the bit parts, I guess, I don't know, in order to not arouse anyone, must be filled by men.
Right. Well, and don't distract us from the problem of your womanhood.
What was information to me was that the studio heads don't care about those parts. So they're like, whatever.
Just. And so there have been sort of breakout stars in those roles, like Isla Fisher was mentioned from when she was in Wedding Crashers. And, you know, I think it was Jamie Dembo who's talked about that, but she's right. I don't remember anything for Wedding Crashers except Isla Fisher was really cool.
Right, it's true. I thought it was interesting that that's where the micromanaging kind of stops at that level, and so people are able to be a little freer with the parts, whereas when you're talking about a main character role, then it's like, well, we have to have Katherine Heigl playing this kind of
Ice Queen, uptight,
you know, because we've basically been kind of pigeonholed into having only one or two options for this female lead, but with these side characters, it's freer, and so then what's the, why are we seeing mostly men in those roles? And then kind of wondering, well, is it because those are the roles that the director, the producer, whoever's involved in the project can put people that they know in, because they don't have to answer to the studio heads about who's filling those roles. So I thought that was kind of interesting, too, in that they were giving some, some women, Tina Fey, Kristen Wiig, Amy Poehler, a lot of credit for not just being successful on their own as women in comedy, but saying, like, hey, other women that I've been working with for years, like, we can all kind of share in some of this, these increased opportunities.
Which I thought was a little role for you.
Yeah, I thought that was cool to hear about. I mean, even if it's just like, oh, we need a bit part for, like, somebody who's driving this van. Why don't I make it my woman friend,
I do think it's also interesting because all of those women are also kind of improvisers, and so they came out of this sort of craft where you have to work together and everything is about, sort of bonding in order to have that sort of group mind, and that's where, they're pulling from the same people that they used to be on teams with.
Right, so it's teamwork, which,
But it also underscores that, like, if your friends aren't successful,
What are the inroads then? If you can?
Because basically they're saying, like, the best inroad is, like, to, like, come up with friends and, like, you all help each other out.
I mean, it just kind of blow my mind when I see Judd Apatow movie after Judd Apatow movie, and it's the exact same people in every Judd Apatow movie.
Yeah.
And they were all in Freaks and Geeks as well, Like, even, if you've seen Freaks and Geeks, the guy who sells them the fake IDs, he shows up in a lot of Judd Apatow movies in bit parts, and I'm like, I've never seen that guy in anything else. Yeah, they're just friends, which is, like, cool, because I like that guy, he's funny, but,
And when you know a person, it makes it easier to write for them and say, like, oh, I know he can do this part, or she can do this part, so I'll just write it for that person's voice.
Yeah, I wondered if, I mean, again, kind of trying to take feminist lens to this, which they were trying to do in the panel too, just, if the expectations for women change, because they're saying, like, men help each other out, they're also really competitive, like, men are kind of competing with each other for these roles, women sort of have to be in this team mentality. I mean, is it an unfair expectation? On the one hand, I like to hear that someone like Tina Fey is bringing other women along with her. On the other hand, should that be the expectation that because you're a woman, you're going to help other women?
Especially for successful women, it puts this extra pressure on top of everything else.
Why aren't you helping others? Which is something women have to deal with all the time anyway.
Yeah, and the pressure to, like, be a mentor, which isn't something that takes only a small amount of time.
Yeah, right. I do think that, I like the idea of working in a team, and I think obviously even women that are comedians and that work together and have a team mentality, they are competing with each other because they're all competing for the big roles just as the men are. Even when the men are helping each other out, they're also competing for the same things. And I just think men can afford to be more, rough with their competition. They can afford to be harsher because they know that there will be more opportunities for them. With women, it's like, in a way, the competition is even more fierce because there are so few of these comedic roles.
And no one's going to criticize them for being competitive.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas with women, it's like, why didn't you help out your friends?
Yeah.
And no matter what, you can't, if you're competitive, you can't win. And if you are trying to help people, why can't you help more people?
Yeah. So it seems like a frustrating,
I think it's
setup,
working in that it's like, at least in this context of sort of building not a new sphere, but helping to integrate women into, like, mainstream comedy. I think that the team mentality is really working, and I think that's what we see in Bridesmaids, with, like, all of these people who know each other and have worked with each other before, writing for each other. And this is something that, I mean, I didn't see Bridesmaids, but all the people on the panel were very, like, Bridesmaids is on the precipice of this new, including women in comedy, and it's turning the tide and stuff like that. So in breaking into mainstream comedy, the teamwork is definitely working. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a good thing.
Oh, yeah, I do, too. And I was excited to see their optimism because it made me sort of change my crotchety tune of, like, there are opportunities for women, or it's so much harder for women. And then it's like, well, it's difficult for everyone. It's a difficult business. And just seeing that people are strategizing in these ways, and, Jamie Denbo just saying, like, you've got to make your own content, put your videos out there. Michaela Watkins, like, posting her own videos on Funny or Die. And just, I don't think that that's an excuse for the systemic problems. Like, I don't really like the, screw the producers, just make your own web videos. It's like a YouTube video is not the same.
So that is something to get a way of, like, an inroad in terms of getting discovered. I have a friend who just put out a web series. It's actually called The Zooey Deschanel Show, where she does her impression of her.
Oh, I've seen that.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, it's
great. Yeah, and it just, I mean, A, in part because she's doing it of a celebrity that people are obsessed with and that nobody's really made fun of before, but I mean, it got hits everywhere, and it's, you know, she's a great actress, she's a really good writer, but that has helped her, you know, get inroads and other things. Like, she just did a College Humor video, and without her series that she did completely on her own with a couple of friends, she wouldn't have that opportunity.
Right, and that is one great thing about being able to post your own content to the web, and that's true for men and women.
Wasn't Ellie Kemper in that College Humor blowjob video?
Yes. Yeah.
I had seen her in dry mouth videos.
Yes. Yeah.
I had seen her in videos before I ever saw her on The Office.
I wonder if that's how it went. Anyways.
And same with, why am I forgetting? Oh, Ronald Glover from that.
Donald Glover?
Oh, yeah, Donald Glover from Community. Oh, he was really? In that College Humor bro rape video.
Yeah, well, Derek Comedy was. Yeah. I mean, well, and I've seen him interviewed about this. I'm a little obsessed with comedy in general. But he was saying that, you know, Derek started posting their videos before a lot of people were on YouTube. And so, like, teenagers got obsessed with them, which was what happened with Noelle Wells. You know, like, teenagers are obsessed with her Zooey Deschanel series.
It's the teens that are on YouTube.
Yeah. All these young whippersnappers on there.
They're making stars.
Yeah. I was also kind of heartened by the fact that they were all so very like, yeah, Web 2.0 is going to help women in comedy because, you know, making your own web series, even if that's a very small step towards what you want as a mainstream comedy career, then it's still a step. Yeah, I mean, I was kind of surprised to hear about that because that wasn't... I mean, it was good, though, because they were... I think they tried to emphasize the fact that... it's that although the numbers of women entering comedy are lower than men, it's not like there are no women, and it's not like women aren't producing all of this content. The problem is that it's not being recognized in the right way, and there's not as many opportunities for them in larger roles, but just because there aren't so many women in Jodh Avatar movies does mean that there aren't women working in comedy on their own on a smaller scale doing what they want to do.
I do think it's changing because... I mean, having sat in a lot of improv classrooms, I've definitely been in ones where it's like, oh, I'm one of three women in here. But more and more, I've felt, and maybe this is just unique to Austin because that's where I live, but more and more, there's equal numbers, if not the women are starting to dominate a lot of rooms. And I think that has a lot to do with, you know, Tina Fey's Ascendance and Amy Poehler doing really well. And so it's just more, I think more people are starting to see it as like, oh, that's something that I can do and I can be funny. And there's not. I think that they've really sort of chipped away at, and not necessarily that it's changed things at the exact moment, but 5 years from now, it'd be really interesting to see.
Yeah. I mean, it does seem like kind of chipping away. And I thought the comment was really interesting from that comedian, Dr. Goddess, who I had not heard of her before. But, you know, she brought up the lack of representation of women in color in a lot of comedy. And I think...
She's right.
Yeah.
Like about SNL with Michelle Obama, especially.
Right. And especially, yeah, she brought up, you know, she said, why don't we have a black woman on SNL? She could... The Michelle Obama jokes are practically writing themselves. And she got some applause when she said, we don't want Kenan Thompson to represent us. And it's... So he plays every black woman character and, you know, Tracy Morgan before him. And
I would argue that the most successful black woman in comedy in America is Tyler Perry's Medea.
Yeah.
Which is pretty sad.
And so, you know, we see these parts being played by men. It's like, these aren't Shakespearean times. Get a woman in the movie. And so I was glad someone brought that up because, you know, the panel wasn't talking about it too much. I think just because, you know, are you tackling ageism? Are you tackling racism? Are you tackling sexism? Like, there are so many stereotypes, heterosexism. I mean, Michaela brought up that SNL does not have a great track record with queer actors either, you know, and that it's just kind of, there are so many ways for these little boxes to open up, and I think we're starting to see that, but we're not there yet either.
Yeah, we're definitely not there yet.
One thing I thought was interesting was Jamie Denbo who said this? I think it was about the whole like Apatow universe, man-child, you know, woman is solid rock thing, which is something that really bothers me, and it's not just because it crops up again and again in his movies, is the woman is this like really stable, uptight kind of adult, like super super adulty person, in contrast to the man stuck in perpetual adolescence, because that's not only something that happens in comedies, but it's something that's really entering drama and like mainstream TV as well, and it's being accepted as this very legitimate character type, and I'm like, no, this is, well, first, personally, I find it boring, and it's also just not, I just don't think it's compelling or sympathetic. But I'm pretty sure it was Jamie Dimon who was talking about this, that, that she's talked to Apatow about this. No, I think it was Aaron Carmen, actually.
It was, yeah. Well, I remember
that she's talked to him about this, yeah. And not to, I'm not, I don't think that Carmen was trying to excuse the, you know, the gender dynamics that Apatow is portraying when he does this, but was trying to sort of explain that in his universe, in his own personal experience, this is how the world is, that men are, you know, very childlike, and the women are very adult-like, and sometimes in these maternal roles and whatever. And the way she put it, and she excused herself for not finding a better way to say it, was that this is his truth, and that's what he's expressing in his art form, because that's what he knows. And so that was actually something I had never really thought about. You know, I had never really seen a Judd Apatow movie as something that was like a very personal expression, you know. But
right.
I guess it is.
Because I think it does get held up as, you know, and a lot of this has to do with the media representations of the media, you know, that here, how many magazine covers have his cast been on, and it's like, the new frat pack, like, this is the new comedy, this is new...
So-and-so is the new John Belushi.
Yeah, romance, and it's like, it's being held up as kind of, this is what comedy is in the 21st century, and there are not a lot of places for women to be funny in those movies, and we don't have a lot else in comedy that's at that level right now.
Yeah.
So I think what people are excited about with Bridesmaids is that, like, you know, and he's produced that.
Yeah.
And maybe with his clout and with people's excitement around some of the other films he's made, combined with people wanting to see an ensemble film like this with women at the front, like, that it will make just as much money, and it can be comparable to 40-Year-Old Virgin, The Hangover, and
yeah.
Like, hey, everyone who just seems so afraid to take these risks, because, you know, as frustrating as it is to me, if I was a Hollywood producer, I would hesitate to throw $100 million at something that wasn't a sure bet, too, you know? So if we can say, like, hey, look at how much money this made, it's okay to have more than one woman in your movie.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need
people
to worry.
People will go see
yeah.
it.
I think that's kind of where some of that excitement comes from, and I have the same hope, you know, that whether or not you think it's, like, a groundbreaking movie, because the plot didn't really blow my mind with surprises.
Yeah.
But I was just having such a great time seeing all those women interacting, because we don't usually get to see that in a movie.
Yeah.
And it also, I mean, one of the things that I really liked was that it had this female friendship that, like, made me kind of weep, because I was friends with girls like that, you know, and to see them at the end, like, totally, like, being dorks, not to give away the end, but, you know, but to see them, like, being dorks together and, like, dancing and mouthing the lyrics to things is, like, that's what I remember doing with my friends, and it made me, like, nostalgic, you know? And also, I think that there's also a degree of, like, sort of a lady bro, like, lady love there.
It's like the lady version of a bromance, which we should think of a name for this now.
I know, last night I was trying to think of one.
Would it be
and I was
womance?
Like,
I like that. I like it.
Okay. It was
a womance.
Because hopefully we're going to be seeing a lot more womances.
Yeah.
I mean, because as I was watching it, I was like, you know, they're kind of in love with each other. Like, in the same way that, like, Jason Segel and Paul Rudd were in I Love You, Man.
Yes.
Which really touched my heart.
I also really like that Rashida Jones has been funny in that movie, too.
Yeah. Because Rashida Jones is so good.
Yeah, Rashida Jones is really funny. I mean, and that's been the argument all along with some of the stuff, like, at like, the Daily Show stuff that happened last year, where it's like, there are women who are funny who are doing this. Don't pretend like the reason that we don't have women is because we don't know where they are. You know, they're everywhere.
I've never seen one. It's
right.
A legendary creature.
Yeah, it's just like we have all men on this show because they're the only ones who do comedy. You know, we know that's not true.
And there's a difference between like we don't have like one thing they mentioned on the panel too was the fact that during the first announcement of the South by Southwest comedy lineup, it was 30 men and one woman. And South by Southwest did release a statement after that saying, like, we literally only had, like, three women come up to us apply to do stand-up at this. And I was like, well, you know, I understand that. Again, the proportion is lower. No one's arguing with that. But you can seek out women. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, this is an institution that's noticing the gender imbalance, and they're in a position to do something about it.
And there's also some really, really strong
female stand-ups here in Austin that make it just as easily. It's not like that person's going to have to travel. Even,
yeah, totally. Just like, hey, do you want to do this? And I thought it was really cool that Rachel Sklar. I was, Sklar was her name tag, so. that, you know, she kind of took that as an opportunity to organize something.
Yes.
And said that, you know, Upright Citizens Brigade and Funny or Die were really quick to say, yes, they wanted to support her also and bring some more women in. And that people in positions of, you know, semi-power. I mean, these aren't people who are, like, heads of studios, but these are people who have connections and say, hey, let's do something about this. And that they did do something about it, you know. Well, now, there are still 29 male stand-ups here, but...
Yeah, and Funny or Die does have its own production company, so, I mean, there's that, too.
There's that amount of power, at least.
And that showcase was hilarious.
Oh, good. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to go.
I missed the end of it, but it was really enjoyable.
One thing I wish... the panel ran out of time, obviously, but I wish that they had had time to go into this more, was this idea of compromising femininity for comedy, which was something that someone brought up in a question, actually, and they asked Michaela Watkins about that, because she, and this was mentioned in the panel as well, after she left Saturday Night Live, Washington Post called her too classically beautiful to be funny, and so the question was about... if she ever had to, felt like she had to, or if she ever felt like she had to, or if she was ever asked to compromise her femininity in order to be funny. And that's something that I think is really important because it's at the heart of why a lot of people think women aren't funny, and that was the whole point of Christopher Hitchens' article is, women are sexy, therefore they can't be funny.
Right.
So,
which I also think is interesting because it seems like there's been a trend recently of, like, you know, comedy to a certain degree. I mean, not every character, but there are lots of characters like Strangers with Candy where it's about the grotesque.
Yeah.
And that there is, especially the last 10 years, I feel like there's been this trend of if you aren't, you have to be hot and funny. And sometimes those two come in direct conflict with each other.
But if there's, I mean, I think there's the standard that you have to be hot and funny, and then you also have to make a lot of jokes at the expense of your own physical good looks, and you have to sort of exploit those, and you can't be just like hot and funny and not make jokes about how you're hot and funny.
Right, it's like you can't ignore your hotness and have comedy about politics.
Yeah,
it has
yeah.
to be like about your boobs.
It's like when I'm thinking about Sarah Silverman, who is, I mean, the basis I think of a lot of her humor is that it's incongruous coming out of a woman who's pretty, and like Olivia Munn, a big deal was made about the fact that when she was a host on G4, there were just, I mean, a lot of the jokes were not only at her expense as a woman, but like exploiting the fact that she's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Or just like, it's hilarious to watch you eat this hot dog.
Yeah.
You know.
Because you're.
So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. And then, you know, it does kind of underscore that while progress is being made, there's not really room for all types of female comedians right now. Because most of the people, I mean, even in Bridesmaids, where they got a lot of women on the bill, we're seeing mostly, like, very beautiful women. And across the board on television, too. It's like,
yeah.
You know, unless you're a total side character and you're kind of being played for laughs, which is also usually by your physical appearance.
Yeah.
But on the opposite side of the spectrum.
I mean, I'm kind of thinking about Modern Family, which I think is a really funny show. And, Sofia Vergara is so gorgeous, but I think she's also really funny on the show, and they do make a lot of jokes about how beautiful she is, but she also, I think, has some opportunities to just be funny in a ridiculous way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially striking, I thought, was, like, someone said something about the pressure to be, quote-unquote, fuckable.
Mm.
And, I mean, not to keep talking about my own experience, but I was once not cast in something that was just, it was a sketch show, hadn't been written yet, and the reason was, it was like, your audition was great, we thought you were really funny, which I thought, if I'm not, that's fine. But it was, we want a different type.
Oh.
And that was pretty devastating, because why does that have anything to do with something that hasn't been written?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, you should cast based on, you know, someone's talent. But we're not there yet, especially when it comes to women, and we've all been frustrated, we as collective women.
Yeah.
Throughout the decades of seeing, you know, this dichotomy of, like, men can kind of look however and are maybe even encouraged to look kind of schlubby, but
yeah.
For women, you know, it's fine if you're pretty, but that really excludes a lot of people because not everyone looks like Olivia Munn, and a lot of people are really funny. And so, you know, maybe that's also where creating web series can kind of come in and, you know, guess what? If you're funny,
maybe other people want to see you be funny, and you know, unfortunately, if you don't go through a studio, then you don't make millions of dollars. I mean, that's the problem.
You don't get to headline, you don't get to whatever.
Yeah. Right.
You still get people watching you. And the way actually that Watkins answered that question was, she said that she doesn't think about compromising her femininity. She doesn't think about making herself grotesque or making herself pretty, because what's foremost on her mind is what she said was the authenticity of the character, which I think is really great, and that's a great example. And I'm sure that every other female comedian has that on their mind as well.
Yeah, they're a comedian.
Yeah,
you know,
but that's not really what the studio, I think, has on their mind.
Or they don't think. I mean, they don't seem to trust audiences to go and see things if it isn't about like a boner fantasy. You know, where it's just like, I won't see something because it's funny. It has to be somebody that I can imagine myself making out with. You know.
Yeah.
And it's again, you know, not to totally like stereotype moviegoers, but I think they picture their audience being like 15-year-old boys. You know. And who are they going to want to have sex with? Olivia Munn or Melissa McCarthy? Like, well, some of them Melissa McCarthy, but most of them are probably going to pick Olivia Munn at 15, you know?
Yeah.
And it's frustrating that here we are, like, adult women whose viewing choices are being limited by, like, sophomore boys in high school, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I wish, maybe that's what needs to happen, is just media literacy at the high school boy level.
Yeah.
Just, like, start liking funnier stuff with women in it, you guys, because we're
just
getting...
Just give them a bunch of tapes.
Yeah, we're getting the short end of the stick over here.
Help us out some.
Yeah.
We have to shift the buying power.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it seems like whenever they are thinking about, like, the 14 or 15-year-old girl, they're not thinking about comedy at all. It's
right.
Twilight.
It's very much like, how can we make this man a supernatural creature?
Yeah, exactly.
It's all about ladies and monsters.
Yeah.
Well,
that's all I got.
Yeah, I thought it was a good panel, and
we'll
continue to update everyone with dispatches from the front here at South by Southwest.
And it sound like we're going to war.
Well, we are field reporting right now in our press lounge. And Sherston and I are going to be writing a counterpoint about Bridesmaids, because one of us liked it and the other one hated it.
Really?
So that's going to go up on the blog, too. So if you were interested in more info about the movie, look for that.
And stay tuned.
Be sure to stay tuned. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Thanks.